With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Keeping the COVID inquiry honest, it's time for the inquiry sessions. Welcome to the Inquiry Sessions on Reality Check Radio. My name is Alistair Harding, and today as we look back on the people and stories of New Zealand's COVID-19 response, we have with us Dr. Peter Canaday, who in January 2024 was found guilty by the Health Practitioners Disciplinary Tribunal of committing professional misconduct for speaking publicly about his views on COVID-19 and the vaccines during the COVID-19 response. Dr. Peter Canaday trained and graduated in 1976 as a Doctor of Medicine at the University of Massachusetts. Then, between 1979 and 1981, he trained for his fellowship in pulmonary medicine at the University of Carolina. Between 1993 and 1997, he retrained again in diagnostic radiology and interventional radiology at the University of Wisconsin. And then between 2013 and 2021, he worked right here in New Zealand in the radiology department of the Taranaki District Health Board at New Plymouth. In short, by the time COVID-19 arrived on our shores, Dr. Peter Canaday was an established, experienced, and extremely well-educated man of medicine. And at a time when we were told our health system and hospitals were under attack by a deadly virus, this was exactly the sort of man of experience that many looked to for advice and knowledge. And it was with that knowledge that he began exercising what he believed was his right, to give his own informed opinion on COVID, the vaccines, and alternative treatments. But if you type his name today into the internet machine, what you will mostly find are numerous news reports covering his subsequent suspension as a doctor for voicing those views, and more recently also his 5-day hearing before the Health Practitioners Disciplinary Tribunal and the guilty verdict it proclaimed. The only part missing now is the penalty he is expected to pay. And so for that reason, to tell his side of the story, Dr. Peter Canaday joins us today for another Inquiry Sessions interview. Peter, welcome, and how are you and where are you after all of this has happened?
Well, thank you, Alistair. Good to visit again. To see where things are going at this point in time. Back in June, we relocated back to the United States, and now in the state of South Dakota. And we await the proceedings yet in New Zealand. Unfortunately, the things which transpired there, which eliminated my capacity to work in my field at all in New Zealand, also had some repercussions in the United States, because the New Zealand Medical Council notified the Federation of State Medical Boards in the United States, and therefore all of the boards of medicine, of which I was registered in 4 boards, so they all heard about the suspension in New Zealand. And I was hoping that somewhere, somehow, at least a few of those would say, this is a foreign country, foreign law. There were never issues in the United States in any of these states. Maybe I can practice here in the U.S. where I have been foreclosed for all practice in future in New Zealand.
So this is the end of your medical career, is it?
Well, that certainly looks that way. In radiology, the long delays of the various proceedings against me made me unemployable, even as a contractor, because I couldn't practice for more than 2 years. And as such, no contractor or no employer in the United States will take me in radiology because I've been out too long. So in effect, they have, the actions of the council have destroyed my career, yes.
Okay. So before we go through the whole story of how we got to this moment, could you just briefly tell us what's actually happened? You were suspended, you were brought up in front of the tribunal, and you've been found guilty. Could you just explain very briefly that process, and then we'll come back to the details in a little while?
Yeah. So the suspension occurred in November of 21, based on the public speaking and a complaint from the roommate of somebody that went to my one of my talks in, I think, Isbin. That suspension was overturned in the district court in Wellington in March of 2022 as being inappropriate, unfair, or disproportionate, rather, and not a measured response. So theoretically, that was restored. But they impaneled what's called the PCC, or Professional Conduct Committee. And when they finally got around to bringing me before the HPDT, the tribunal, in April of 23, it was now over a year and a half almost to having that 5-day tribunal. And it took them another 7 months to reach a decision, which came out in November of this year, of just this previous year, 23. In that, they found that I had brought discredit to the profession. And they had four allegations that they believed had been proven from the various charges that were brought. And they were that they felt it was careless to discuss a link between this vaccine and possible deaths related to them, although I never actually said there was a definite link, that I was also careless in suggesting there was potential infertility or sterility that might occur after the vaccines, even though I produced the paper that had shown that it could be a risk, and that I was not really sufficiently qualified. I mischaracterized my credentials and my ability to give some advice on the vaccine, which, by the way, I never did give advice, but that's how they characterized it. And then lastly was this matter about discussing that the potential ingredients of graphene oxide in the vaccine components, which had been shown at least in some initial studies. But anyway, they thought it was really related to some so-called carelessness in speaking to the public.
Okay, so let's go back to the start. I first met you in 2021. You were touring the country at that time with a slideshow talking about the COVID vaccines. Is that where all this came from?
Yes, it was related to those talks that I had given on the road, but the one that was available to the tribunal and to the medical council and the various organs of the council was the 17 August webinar version of what I was doing in public speaking. And that was given by Voices for Freedom as the sponsor. And we had a 2-hour presentation webinar, which was called COVID-19 and the Pfizer vaccine, Fact or Fantasy. That was the title that we had at the time. So that was the basis of their complaints. They looked through that. There was a radio interview in Raglan Community Radio, which was given just before that evening's presentation in Raglan in July of 21. And then there was another webinar that was held by the hosts of Voices for Freedom called Courageous Convos. That was just a sort of a free wheeled discussion about matters that were going on at the time. And that was also, I think, in July of 21. So it's on that basis they extracted various quotes from the transcripts of those items. And they said, well, from that, we now have 10 charges that we're going to make.
I find this all very confusing. I read through the summary of the decision from the tribunal, and it says in there that you're entitled to express your opinions, but you were careless because your position as a health practitioner gave credibility to your statements. I mean, we were told all along to only listen to doctors and scientists. And here you were, a doctor with oodles of experience and, in their words, the right to speak, but you were careless to do so. Is that the crime here?
Well, the crime was, I think, their inferences, which I believe to be factually incorrect in their report, where they believed that I had made definite statements that there is definitely deaths caused by the vaccine, that there is definitely sterility and infertility caused by the vaccine, where in fact I never said those things. Their expert witness actually made the claim that he felt I was wrong to say that the vaccines had caused a death. But again, I never said that. So he misread. He did not listen carefully to what I said because I was quite careful in couching my presentations with terms which are tentative, That is to say, things could potentially be linked, that this appearance of 30 times the number of reported deaths after vaccination of this kind, the Pfizer and the other mRNA vaccines, 30 times the reports in the US-based system, was a worrisome signal that required us to look into whether there was, in fact, a relationship between one and the other. They did not hear it that way. They didn't listen carefully, in my opinion. And I think as a result of that, they have used these terms such as being careless. You know, this is something that I think does need to be addressed because it's factually wrong what they said.
But they're saying that you're talking about mortality rates and studies and so on from the United States. That's one of their criticisms in this judgment, isn't it?
That it is.
Saying these things about the United States and you're not balancing them with what was going on in New Zealand. Is that actually a fair statement for them to make, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, at the time, when I looked at these figures, there were 250 times the number of cases of COVID-19 in the United States compared to New Zealand. 250 times the number of cases. No New Zealand author writing in the scientific literature that I was aware of had anywhere near adequate number of cases to be able to make comments about effective treatment or, you know, that sort of thing. I was relying on world-class experts in my presentations, the ones who did have hundreds of cases that they had treated and had published about it. World-class authors who actually had already been well known in their fields. The medical council was suggesting that I did not have sufficient credentials to be discussing this matter of COVID-19 and the vaccine. But in fact, it's not my credentials that they should be looking at. It's the credentials of those world-class experts whose studies I presented, whose work I had talked about. Those are the ones who are on trial. You know, it's puzzling to me because the matter of balance, if you take a scale and you put 1 kilogram on one side of the scale and 250 kilograms on the other side of the scale, how can you possibly have any kind of concept of balance? You know, that notwithstanding the fact that the government was not under any obligation whatsoever to be balanced. And so as a public speaker, I was supposed to be balanced when the government had no such obligation whatsoever. And I think we all know that when government comes out and says, well, we will be your single source of truth, that there's not much balance there, is there?
In that respect, are you not the balance that they're talking about?
I would have thought so. I mean, again, we have to say, who is the neutral observer here? And I would suggest that it is not the members of the tribunal. They took, as the tribunal makeup, no one who was, what shall we call it, on the other side, no one from the group of my colleagues and those within the NZDSOS, the New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science, who would have presented the potential balance on the tribunal itself, but they didn't do that.
Okay, another criticism from the tribunal is that you drew a link between the vaccine and deaths, and they said that this was highly emotive. Another one was that you talked about graphene oxide in the vaccines, and they're inferring that you didn't have enough evidence to make these claims. But at the same time, they actually say also that you're not lying. They do admit that you were talking in good faith. So where is the truth here? And I suppose if you were to be ultra self-critical, do you think you could have talked about these subjects any better than you did?
Well, I guess that's always a question. I mean, I had that in mind when I was preparing these talks in the first place. You know, way back then, I said, well, what's more important, that I be so careful as to not talk about these things? Or should I couch the discussion in terms of saying, look, this is what's published in the medical literature. This, in any neutral person's mind, should suggest, well, actually, wait a minute, there's maybe something wrong here. Let us use the precautionary principle and say, well, if we really don't know what these long-term effects are, and there is now a suggestion that there could be a link between the vaccinations and deaths, or between vaccination sterility, or that there may be this foreign substance, this graphene oxide, maybe we really ought to be a lot more careful to find out, is this really true or not, before we roll this out through the entire population of New Zealand and, in fact, the entire population of the world. So I would say be more tentative about it, perhaps. But I think it is actually very patronizing for the tribunal and for the Medical Council of New Zealand to say, New Zealanders are not allowed to know this information. They're not allowed to know what potentially could be wrong here. And I think that is the thing that really concerned me the most. There was no balance from the government's position. There was this criticism that I was hindering the vaccination program. Well, they never asked the question whether, in fact, that was actually a worthwhile thing to be doing. I mean, that at the time, the assumption was the vaccination is going to prevent New Zealanders from getting ill. It's going to have a huge improvement in what could have happened in hospitalizations and deaths and all that. Well, we now know for sure that's just not the case. And we know a lot more 3 years later than we did in the beginning. And in fact, what we do know is that almost everything that I had talked about has now been proven.
Why did you decide that you wanted to do it in the first place? I mean, tensions were very high on this subject at that time. I remember that vividly. Were you ever worried that this was going to happen? Did you see this coming? And why did you decide you wanted to do it?
I think I have an obligation to speak the truth, regardless of how it may be received by others. My obligation is to speak the truth and to do so as carefully and as precisely as I can do. Given the fact that I do have this experience, I did teach radiology registrars for 8 years. I was accustomed to making these PowerPoint presentations. I did have the background in respiratory medicine, of which COVID-19 was certainly involved, although I hadn't treated COVID-19. And I made that point. I had told people, look, this is, you know, long ago, I treated cases like this, respiratory failure. And I said, look, I feel an ethical obligation that I have the information. It would be wrong to withhold it. There are legitimate concerns, I felt, that had to be brought before the New Zealand public. And I thought they had the right to know. My right to speak, my right to expression, is also the audience's right to hear.
Do you think we're ever going to know the full extent or what the health effects are of the vaccines, whether they are good or they are bad? Do you think we'll ever know the truth?
The truth is out there now. And it actually, in New Zealand, is evident as to using the very statistics which are published by the government of New Zealand. The original statistics released by the New Zealand government show us the answers. They show us that there has been an increase in the excess mortality in the vaccinated population compared to the non-vaccinated population. So we know that happened. We knew actually at the time of my talk back in 2021 that the work from John Ioannidis, a world-class epidemiologist, showed that the actual mortality from the COVID-19 pandemic was something on the order of 0.2%. It was rather like a bad flu year. So it was never... Early on, it was never defensible to say this is a huge pandemic of, you know, great proportions. They knew back then, they could have known that it wasn't as bad as it was said, particularly since New Zealand missed the initial Wuhan strain, which was the most lethal of all of them. It's the most lethal of all the variants that came after that. And by the time we did get the Wuhan and then the Delta, I mean, we, not the Wuhan, but we tell them we've got the Delta and the Omicron and the various other variants, the mortality rates had also decreased considerably. Transmissibility was up, but mortality was down compared to the early strain. So I think we do know. It's just you have to be able to look in the non-traditional, non-legacy media to find out.
But it also seems to me that there are only really two sorts of people. You've either got vaccine authoritarians or vaccine skeptics. You know, for instance, here in New Zealand right now, we've got the COVID-19 National Inquiry has begun, and it's led by a man, Professor Tony Blakely, who was a very vocal supporter of lockdowns and mandates on both sides of the Tasman. And this is the guy that's supposed to be overseeing what we're supposed to look at the pandemic response. Are there actually any independent, unbiased, grey area voices on this topic anymore? Or are we Are we condemned to just waiting out a period of time before people can actually look at this in a calm, rational fashion?
I don't think that I don't have much faith in this COVID inquiry. I don't think that it's likely we're going to find the truth about this because there is too much at stake for the government.
Okay. What do you think? Do you think that you brought the medical profession into disrepute? Did you destroy the credibility of medicine in New Zealand?
I don't understand how that can be justified, because if what I'm doing is bringing forth truthful, published, peer-reviewed publications, I would suggest that that's actually what we should be doing as physicians. That's what should maintain the reputation of the medical profession. But rather to ignore those things and to bury them, that is what's going to bring disrepute upon the profession. Again, it's not my credentials that matter. It's what the world-class experts and published authors are saying that matters. And I think every New Zealander had the right to know those things.
So when do you find out what's going to happen to you? When do you find out the penalty that they've reserved at the moment?
Well, the PCC, the Professional Conduct Committee, has requested that I have a suspended practice certificate for 18 months, that before I can reacquire that, I have to have some period of re-education that I'm supposed to pay for, that I should be paying over $120,000 of court costs by the government, so that I should pay for my prosecution, you know, that I should be censured and so on and so forth. So, the interesting part, they said, well, and we don't see any reason why Dr. Kennedy cannot afford $120,000 court costs, having effectively destroyed my earning capacity entirely as a doctor. They see no reason why that should happen. So
this is the end of your medical career, basically. You don't really see how you're going to be able to come back from this.
I don't know, but it doesn't look particularly promising, to be honest.
Do you find this ironic at all, that there's a shortage of doctors and nurses in this country at the moment, and they're driving you out and others like you out of the profession right when they need you most?
Well, it's almost like it's sort of planned, you know. It's like, is this part of a big plan, really? it gets into something that's really quite sinister, and I guess it's not really something I want to get into, but it does, you know, make one say, well, is there, I mean, it makes no sense logically, right? So you say, well, okay, is there some other reason? Because it doesn't seem to, our group of dissidents or whatever you want to call them, in the NZDSOS, they don't want us to contaminate the thinking of those who are now the majority working within the system. And I can see operationally why they want to prevent us from having access, because they think we would talk, and we'd actually talk to them about things like the published studies that show, you know, worrisome things. So I can understand from an operations standpoint, they don't want dissidents in the system, and they're happy to effectively weaken the health system even further in view of that goal.
So where to from here? And do you have any plans to appeal this or anything like that?
Well, I mean, I made a 3-page list of my criticisms of the tribunal decision, which were roughly broken down into 3 parts, which related to breaches of procedure. For example, no specific injured party was ever identified in regard to the disparagement of other practitioners. Normally, that's required in any kind of natural law or common law. You have to have somebody that's complaining that's been injured. There's no demonstration of injury. I couldn't cross-examine anybody because there was no injured party. The expert witness never looked at my 2,000 pages of references and data to sustain my position. You know, so it's like, well, was this a fair trial? I don't think so. So I think that requires a concern about, you know, a judicial review. There were breaches, in my view, there were breaches of law, spurious exemptions to freedom of expression under the Bill of Rights Act. They gave various cases that they purported to represent why the freedom of expression could be limited. They failed to recognize the supremacy of the ICCPR, the international treaty obligations, which New Zealand has, which basically say you cannot prevent freedom of speech during a national emergency, which is what this was. So it said you cannot derogate or abuse the right to freedom of speech just because it's a national emergency. It's right there. New Zealand was a signer of this treaty. So, you know, and then there's this matter of that we will tolerate no anti-vaccination statements. And that was from the chair of the medical council. Now, that is what's called prior restraint. Prior restraint is you tell a person based on the content of their speech that they are not allowed to speak. So that is a prima facie breach of the Bill of Rights Act. I mean, you can't do that. That by itself is unlawful. So these are at least a few items that I think should be brought up on appeal to the High Court or to Civil High Court, which has the ability to actually make legitimate statements about the role of the Bill of Rights Act in New Zealand. The tribunal, that's not their wheelhouse. They can make statements and all of that, but that's not, that carries no real weight in New Zealand law, in my view. I mean, it has to be as close as you get to a constitutional issue, and a tribunal cannot deal with matters of constitutional issues in New Zealand. So my view is that I see no way for this not to be appealed, at least if we are to preserve freedom of speech in New Zealand. And I think it is critically important.
It's no longer a medical issue. It's a Bill of Rights issue.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just because I'm a doctor, am I going to say, well, all right, the medical council, in their own purview, has decided when they can breach my freedom of speech. That's not in their statute. It's not in their authorizing statute to be able to do that. And to my knowledge, there is no act of parliament that was passed that said, oh, by the way, doctors are not allowed to speak freely during the pandemic. There was no such law. This stuff was kind of made up at the time. And, you know, that's not lawful. And so, you know, this guidance statement that said, you will talk about the advantages of the vaccine, you won't talk about the risks. Well, that's breaching their own requirements for informed consent, where you must talk about the risks as well as the benefits. So the medical council breached their own standards in which informed consent must be discussed before, you know, carrying out any procedure. So once again, that was unlawful. So again, that's the sort of thing that needs to be appealed, in my opinion. I mean, there's so many things. You know, the precautionary principle, which is longstanding ethical principle, was totally ignored, and they expected the doctors to ignore that. You have to take precautions when we have a new and untested pharmaceutical product. We know what happened with thalidomide years ago, and that was a drug that was fully tested. It did go through all of the testing process. Unlike this sort of emergency use authorization in the States or the so-called provisional consent in New Zealand, which is very similar. And the whole issue of the ethical breaches there also need to be brought up in appeal.
Okay. Do you have any regrets?
I would have regretted not saying something when I had an opportunity to do so, because again, that's my ethical obligation as a physician, whether I'm practicing or not, whether I have, you know, a career or not, you know, and I have to say that, you know, I was fortunate to have been toward the end of my career really anyway. And I think that made it easier for me to be more free in speaking than would be the case, you know, had I been in the middle of my career with, you know, another obligations. It's not to say that it should not have been done by even those people, but it was certainly easier for me when I was near retirement anyway. So, yes, I mean, I will not have a part-time career, which I had hoped to have, but I'll live and sleep better for what I've done.
Okay. Well, we'll leave you with that, and we'll wait for the penalty to be announced. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope you you enjoy all the free time that they've given you. And I also hope that we haven't seen the last of you in New Zealand.
All right. Thanks, Alistair. We'll talk again.
That's Dr. Peter Cannaday, one of the many well-credentialed and experienced doctors that have been lost to New Zealand in the wake of our COVID-19 response. Despite what the newspapers say, Dr. Kanaday has not actually been found guilty of spreading misinformation. But he has been found to have brought his profession into disrepute for carelessly expressing his own opinion. As is his right to do so, their words not mine. The only thing we wait for now is the penalty he will receive. But since it took a year to hear the verdict, it will probably be another year to discover the outcome. My name is Alistair Harding, and this has been an Inquiry Sessions interview with Dr. Peter Kanaday, and you're listening to Reality Check Radio. The RCR Inquiry Sessions. Unpacking the COVID response for an honest inquiry. With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.